You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
I don't need you to tell me how good my coffee is, okay?
Hello and welcome to another episode of A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. I'm once again here with my friend Julie.
Hi.
And this month we're actually joined by a special, very special guest from the Cinema Rex, which is my favourite cinema in the world. And that is saying something. So please welcome Martina Amrein. Hello, Martina.
Yes, hello. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Perhaps to begin with, can you perhaps just tell us a couple of things about yourself, your work, and your relationship to cinema, I guess?
Yes, of course. I was born in the early 80s and grew up at the Lake of Thun. And I also grew up with television, only with the Swiss channels, though. So very poor film experience as a kid and also as a teenager. Cinema came into my life rather late, in my mid-20s. And that's when I started studying at University of Zurich. I don't know why exactly, but there was a need to study film in a theoretical way. So I went to Zurich for film theory, for history and for analysis. And I was really into it. We were watching films afterwards, after the lectures. And that's also the time when I started going to festivals such as Fantosch in Baden, which is an animation film festival, but also Locarno and Nyon with the documentaries. And after my studies, I kind of thought how I could get into this film world. And that's when I did an internship at Fantosch Festival in the communication. And I really love this gathering of the festival where everything is so intense, where people come together and talking about film, meeting other people that are so cinephile as I was. So I really love this meeting point. And then in 2016, I was very lucky to get a job at Cinema Rex in communication and promotion. Maybe I should just shortly explain Rex, because it's a special cinema. We have on one side the art house premiere films, which we play daily. And then on the other side, we have monthly retrospectives, such as Marilyn Monroe, but also thematic cycles. And at Rex, I'm doing a lot of administration, communication. I'm responsible for the Rex Kids program, and I organized the cycle Film History, which we do together with the Kinemathek Lichtspiel. And we kind of look back to 110 years of film history and therefore invite people for lectures on a decade, on a special theme they can choose themselves, and then also show two films. And that's now we are on the eighth cycle of this film history.
Oh, wow.
I'm still going, love to go to festivals, not at the moment though, but yeah, I hope to do it soon again.
That is really cool. Thank you very much. Just perhaps as a question, when you studied film, did you have anything that you specialized on? Any kind of director, era, style?
No, because the film theory is always interdisciplinary thing with the literature, with psychology. So I was interested in the audience. For example, I had a seminar on the feelings of the audience, which was quite interesting. But there was no special director or filmmaker or anything like that, because it's only a minor, and it would be in the master that you would have a special field, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It was very based on rather European cinema, I would say.
Okay, thanks a lot. Julie, what about you? Did you grow up with the cinema, with films?
I'm a child of the TV generation, people. I remember when we first got our VCR. We got a color TV and we got a VCR. And I remember the first film I recorded was a Disney film called Bedknobs and Broomsticks. So I'm very much a child of the TV generation. When I was tiny, cinema was mostly for children's parties. And you'd all go, all the little girls would go watch a Disney film. And I was, as a little girl, very much a Disney kind of person. But then we watched Bambi in the cinema. And then, of course, in, I think it was 85, we watched The Black Cauldron. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I was so frightened and upset that I didn't want to go back to cinema for a while. So even though I have a lot of memories about cinema, the real sort of interest came later. That is, for me, came around when I was in middle school. So around the Tarantino thing, the Pulp Fiction thing, Trainspotting, that sort of thing. So that was basically my first big sort of cinema, you know, experiences. So that's sort of what shaped me a little bit. And of course, even later, the films got older and older and older. And now I'm doing films, writing stuff about films from 1913. So yeah,
yep.
That's me.
I mean, it's Disney, I think, will probably factor into a lot of people's growing up with films. I mean, it's also with me. When I was a kid, when I was really small, we had these family outings to the cinema once a year. It was always on the second Sunday in December, basically second of Advent. We'd always go out for lunch. Mm-hmm. And then we go to see a film. And back then, it was always the Disney films that they showed around that time. I think it must have been basically they were showing old Disney films, because I distinctly remember seeing The Aristocats and 101 Dalmatians, even though at the time when they originally came out, I hadn't actually been born yet. So
they cycle them, don't they? Disney has this policy where they cycle these films. So every few years, they bring out an old film of theirs, or they used to bring out an old film of theirs in cinema.
Mm-hmm.
So the same goes with Me and Bambi. The same goes with all the older films, the 101 Dalmatians, is that they used to cycle them in cinema. That was Disney's business model.
Okay.
Absolutely. And as I said, it was always our family tradition. It was something that I think it's one of my, basically my earliest memories are of looking forward to the yearly Christmas cinema outing. And later on, it then became other films. Like, I remember us going to see E.T. as a family and me crying after 2 minutes. Not because I was scared, but because I felt so sad for this little space gnome lost on Earth. Mm-hmm. I also remember going to see Ghostbusters with my family. We actually went to see Amadeus, which I'm not quite sure what I thought as a 9-year-old, but I remember liking it. So I think these are the kind of my memories. And then basically the very first time I went to the cinema on my own, I think, was for Labyrinth, because I was the only person in the family who actually liked fantasy and those kind of films, whereas the rest of my family was staunchly realist in their taste. But I mean, I would say that I definitely like watching films also at home. I love watching films on the sofa with my wife, but the cinema is special. The cinema is something different, especially with cinemas closing a lot over the last couple of years. I am just very grateful that there are cinemas like the Rex that basically allow people like me to indulge in our addiction.
Yeah.
So in that respect, let's perhaps talk a bit about what is it like to work at or for a cinema. So Martina, I mean, for you, you said that basically you started being into film in a big way when you started studying, but then you made it your job to work at a cinema. Has that affected the way you watch films or the way you go to the cinema at all?
I think so, yes. I started, while I was doing professional maturity, I worked as, I don't know how is it called in English, eine Platzanweiserin. So then I had the movie pass to go to any cinema with a companion for free. So I was watching everything I could. So I went a lot. But that was for 1 year, 2004 to 2005. So in that period, I saw a lot of films. But since I work at Rex, I try to watch a lot of films in the cinema, but time-wise, it's sometimes a bit too much after working at the computer in front of the small screen to go then to the big screen. But of course, I'll try to as much as I can. My job is not at all a hobby, because it's work. It's for everyone, I guess, and it's a serious job. But of course, like, the content of my work is, it's just a pleasure. And it's always new discoveries that you can make within your work, which is just great. And in that term, I think at the moment, I'm closest to what I really love to do in my work life.
Mm-hmm.
The things of work and what I really go for is as close as it hasn't been forever. Yeah.
That is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It must also be, I think, because a little bit of background, I used to be a freelancer and I used to work for an orchestra. I was a production assistant, production manager type, dragging chairs and also doing admin, making copies and coordinating everything and that sort of thing. And I did a lot of film music with the orchestra as well. And we did a big Lord of the Rings gig and I got to meet Christopher Lee.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that stuff is all very cool. But Martina, as you say rightly, it's a job and it can get pretty hectic.
Yeah.
And of course, as a freelancer and with these types of projects, there's always funding. So you always have to wait whether the offer that was made by the orchestra is approved and your wages are approved mm-hmm. for every project. So it can get a little bit tough, even if you love what you do a lot and mm-hmm. you do a lot of really cool stuff. It's still a pretty serious sort of mission that you're on, I think.
Of course. And also, I mean, for example, I discovered Hong Sang-soo, Hotel by the River at Locarno Film Festival, this Korean director, which mm-hmm. is very much known at festivals, but not in the wide cinema audience, I would say. And then afterwards, we had a retrospective at Cinema Rex, which I just love to go to watch all the movies, but I just didn't have the time. Or in another sense, like my free time, I also need to have some other experience, like just go out and walk around, you know, not to sit all day and all night, which is a pity, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that's also very difficult to maintain the kind of relationship mm-hmm. you have to cinema. As you get older, as you enter professional life and all of that, I think it's also changed for me. I mean, I never worked with film, but I worked in literature. I taught literature at university for a while. Yep. And I think for me, one of the main things was always making sure that I maintain my love for literature, because I started studying it because I loved it. And of course, the moment you make something that you love your profession, even if it's kind of tangential, mm-hmm. I think it is difficult to keep that love exactly what it is without it changing. And I have to admit that, you know, it's sometimes difficult to love literature when you're reading, I don't know, a couple of dozen really bad student essays. Obviously, if any of my former students are listening to this, obviously your essays were very good. I'm not talking about yours. But after I left university, like so many people, because there was simply not that much of a career in it, I now work in a very bureaucratic job. I go to an office. And in that respect, I think I've probably regained some of the feeling I had for literature and film and all of these things that I had as a student now that I no longer work at it. Because I feel pretty okay after sitting at an office chair for 8-9 hours to then go to the cinema and sit again for 2-3 hours. I think in that respect, it's really brought back some of that pure love mm-hmm. for it, and just the almost childlike enjoyment that I used to have. But it is difficult. I mean, it is, I think, the moment you start working 30, 40, 45 hours a week or more, it's just, sometimes you're just too tired. Sometimes you want to just sit down and watch Netflix or, as you said, go out for a mm-hmm. walk. And I remember times as a student where I'd go and see stuff, you know, 2-3 films in a row, and it would not be a problem. I simply cannot do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's the same for me. I think that's why I just love film festivals, but because then I don't work, so I really plunge into cinema. I can watch between 4 and 6 films a day. It's not a problem. Mm-hmm. And you kind of meet similar people on your way, and which is really interesting to also talk in between and have a coffee and a chat. So that's why I love festivals.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you said that basically the programming at the Rex, it's partly art house, world cinema, it's partly retrospectives, mm-hmm. Thematic retrospectives or on artists. I don't know, the big films that come out every year or that used to come out every year before 2020 and everything that's happened. I remember in Bern, you'd have basically 4 cinemas showing the new Star Wars or the new Marvel movie at the same time. Working at the Rex, is that a very different world from those blockbuster cinemas, or is it all a kind of shared community of cinemas and you feel you're all basically doing the same thing, even if you might be showing different programming?
Well, I think it's very different, actually, because we don't really have contact to these blockbuster cinemas. We don't have contact to Pate, which is at Westside, or to Cinedom, which is the cinema of Kitag. And Kitag just closed all their cinemas in the town and went to the suburbs to have this 10 cinema theater multi-complex. So there's not really a relation between Rex, which is one of the 5 independent Bernese cinemas, to this blockbuster kind of stuff. Also because the film distributors vary a bit. There's a few art house cinema film distributors, and I think the big ones, we don't really have a contact to them, or just a very small one. So there's not much similarity, even though it's mm-hmm. both cinema, of course, and even though I also like to go to watch a blockbuster from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that Rex is really a kind of a niche cinema because it's very special. It has a bar. It used to have these DJ nights once a month. We have sometimes live music to films, also silent movies with music. We have lectures, we have guests, we have a 50s bar, which is totally different. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it also appeals to other people, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, I'd totally go. I mean, it would be a long plane ride just to go to the cinema. But this is the sort of stuff, the stuff that you describe is the sort of stuff that I truly, truly love. And when I used to live in Amsterdam, there was a bit of that about. But here in Alkmaar, we've just lost or almost lost one of our independent cinemas. And it's breaking my heart because it's the sort of stuff that I love and that a lot of people love. But that somehow the company heads or whoever the powers that be are think that is not so interesting, right?
Yeah.
Whereas it is. It is interesting. And I think it's a cultural boon to have something like that in your city. I really do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Has the Rex found that defining a niche for itself is basically necessary?
Oh, even? Yes, of course. It's necessary in many ways, because then you also talk to a special audience. And because of the profile of Rex and also to others, because in Bern, we have these 5 independent cinemas, which I think each of them has kind of a special niche, more or less, or a special kind of films or audience they talk to. And for Rex, I think it's really important because we have about maybe 500 friends, like cinema friends, who pay an annual amount to come to cinema for less or for free. And these people mm-hmm. sometimes just come without knowing what the film is about because they just rely that it was a fine curation of the program of the new films. And they kind of rely on the taste, in a sense, of our film programming.
Yeah.
And I guess that this is the key for like the cinema of the future, in a sense.
Yeah. I don't know if our audience knows the New Beverly in Los Angeles. That's an American cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And what's special about it is that Quentin Tarantino does part of the programming.
Oh,
there.
Wow, yeah.
And people, they're very good at social media. They have podcasts. They have all this sort of stuff. And they're very sort of engaged with their audience. And this is the same sort of thing that you're talking about. People will just get a ticket, go and watch a movie they have never even heard of because somebody chose it for them and it's somebody they trust,
yeah.
You know, and this is not the sort of stuff that you will get in the mainstream. And I think for a lot of cinemas, that might be their saving grace in the future, as you say, very rightly.
Yeah.
So in that respect, I guess that the Rex also has almost a community of an audience, the people that always go there. But I also have to say that it's the one cinema that I've gone to over the last couple of years where you get people that are younger than me, you get people that are older than me. It's a very mixed audience. Whereas when the Blockbuster cinemas were still open, I'd go to them and me and my wife, we were always the oldest, yeah, very clearly in the audience, which is okay. You know, I don't have a problem with that, but it's nice to see that mixed audience.
Mm-hmm.
Young people who perhaps see these films for the first time, older people who have perhaps seen them when they first came out. And that's, I think, really cool. You mentioned that you've got programming other than films. You've got the lectures. Mm-hmm. You've got, of course, the bar. You've got other activities. You've got an annual quiz.
Mm-hmm.
How conscious were you all from the beginning that you were also in a way curating not just a program, but also a community?
Well, I think that because of the history of Cinema Rex, which beforehand was based in Kinoart Kunstmuseum Bern, had its own cinema, which was founded in the 80s. And then later on, the association, which is called Cineville, who also is now responsible for Rex, took over independently. And then later on, because the space was needed by the museum itself, we were looking for a new space and then luckily could take over from Kitag, the Cinema Rex. So I think it's already in that history of Cinema Kunstmuseum, Cinema Rex, that it became the kind of cinema it is now. It's not that we were thinking like 5 years ago, oh, now we're going to do this. It kind of developed automatically in a sense. And what I want to say is that, like, for example, the bar is really important as a meeting point, not only for the cinema goers, but also just for other people who like the place, the atmosphere, the foyer as such to meet up. And I think it's become quite a good place to meet up in at the central space at the station. You can rent the cinema, you can be a friend, you can put your ads on a big screen. It's this whole mix of different things that's put together the cinema as it is now. It's not just going to a movie and buy popcorn and then go home. You meet up before, you drink something, you talk with other people. Afterwards, you talk to your friends, or sometimes I talk to strangers about films, which is really nice. And I think it's this kind of atmosphere and this whole experience as such to go out and to talk afterwards and then, yeah, have just this exchange with other people as well. I think that's really important.
Yeah, it's an experience, isn't it? It's not just going to see Rocky number 15. You have the entire experience.
Let's perhaps talk a bit about the difference between, I mean, we all have said that we like watching films, but we've also said that cinema is something different. So let's perhaps start with you, Julie, this time. In what respect is it different for you to watch something at a cinema rather than watching it at home?
Yeah, I'm also a festival girl. That is one of the things that really adds so much, doesn't it, to the experience, especially if it's well done.
Yeah.
As you say, the entire experience of it. Because I watch a lot of older movies, I tend to be stuck at home with my Blu-ray player, get the best quality I can find and see all this old stuff. But of course, when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came out, we had to see it in cinema. So we chose a very quiet time of day. We chose the matinee and we almost had this entire room to ourselves. So we almost had like this private screening of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was so lucky because we both had the day off and we just decided to go to the matinee right then and there. And also to sort of link into the story about Cinema Rex, we have one of my favorite theaters in Amsterdam. It's called the Tuschinski Theater. And it's been completely renovated. Some of our listeners may want to Google some pictures of it. It's been redone completely. And this is a place that's so special that I've often said, okay, look, it doesn't matter what's playing. I really don't care if it's a child's movie or whatever. If you are in Amsterdam for a couple of days, you're a cinephile, go to the Tuschinski Theater just to see the theater. I mean, it's just really, really cool experience because it's such a beautiful classic old theater and I'm glad it still exists. I watched Batman there, I think, because I was like, I have to now go to Tuschinski Theater to see like anything. I don't care what's there. And of course the art house cinemas that are more about community. We have the Ketel House in Amsterdam in West, where I watched Cave of Forgotten Dreams. We also had dinner there. There's this complete, I have an entire day out with a movie in stuff, which makes it very different from my usual, because I watch a great many films, but a lot of them at home, sadly, because I would love to see Lawrence of Arabia on the big screen or a great silent film with live music or a different score. But there is very little opportunity for that unless you are in the big city, I think.
For me, I've loved films for a long time and my family, I mean, I'm also a child of the 80s. We watched a lot of TV. I think basically family life with us was mostly watching TV, except for the annual outing pilgrimage to the cinema. But I think what I love about the cinema is really this sensual aspect, this the theatrical experience in a very kind of old-fashioned way. The red velvet curtain, the lights going out, all of that is something that is very special. Not with all films, but with many films, it just adds something to it. I have to say that even though I love going to the cinema, I've never been a huge fan of cinema audiences, especially if it's a comedy. If you watch a comedy in Switzerland, where basically you have, ideally, you've got the original language, but you've got subtitles. And because of the subtitles and reading speeds, everyone laughs at a different time, which makes you feel, why are they laughing? Or they think, why isn't that person laughing over there? So audiences, I mean, this is a horrible thing to say in a conversation with someone who works at a cinema, but I've always kind of liked the showings where it's just me, my wife, and perhaps two or three other people.
Yeah, no, I imagine. Yeah. I can understand well.
Yeah, but again, I think that's for me. I mean, this is just my experience. But when I go to the multiplex to see, I don't know, whatever action movie there is, you get a lot of people talking, people rustling crisp packages. But when you go to the art house cinema, for instance, when I watched The Herzog, in Amsterdam, it's a really different crowd. Mm-hmm. And they tend to respect the art a little bit more, is my impression, than when you go to a huge multiplex, which is like packed with people who just want things to say bang very loudly, you know?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And for me, I'd say that I really like the black box as such, that you don't have any disturbance, no distractions, because in my daily life it's so much about email, about telephone, about SMS. It's every hour there's things going on. And in the cinema, I really have 2 hours for myself. I don't need to reply to anyone, to talk to anyone. But I just can plunge into the really nice, comfortable seat and into a story, which usually is far away from my daily life. And I love that. Yeah,
yeah, that's true, isn't it? Because, for instance, when I think about it, when it's something really special, even when at home, I tend to just turn off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because the social media, as you say, the distractions. So I mute all notifications, you know, except my parents' telephone number.
Yeah.
Just so I don't get a bleep every 2 seconds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you.
Absolutely. I think for me, the sitting in the darkness and then having this floating rectangle of light and color in front of you, there's just something so magical about it. I really think there's, to me, it feels like a magic ritual of the lights go off and then this window into a different world opens up in front of you, which sounds very Purple Rose of Cairo, probably.
No, what it reminds me, I don't know, do you know Mark Cousins? Mark Cousins is a filmmaker and also a film historian, and he talks about cinema like a less secular person would talk about church.
Oh.
He talks like we converge in the cinema to, as you say, Mats, to watch this lighted screen. And he's a very secular man, but you can almost tell with him, he's an enthusiast, of course, you can almost tell with him that for him, it's all about the congregating of these people to watch this one amazing story. So that's what it reminds me of most, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if we come back again to the audience, as you were saying, Matt, because I really like the audience when, for example, we showed Sherlock Jr. With Buster Keaton, which is just absolutely great, of course. And I love other people laughing together with me. So I kind of like the atmosphere. I don't like it if it's too packed and if people are eating popcorn and that kind of thing. But if it's like funny in that sense, it's just great to watch movies mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, with Sherlock Jr., the advantage was that since it's a silent movie, you don't have this thing where people laugh at different places because the sound and the subtitles are not kind of all that synchronous. But yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that definitely does make a big difference. And I also remember you mentioned the Marilyn Monroe retrospective that we also mentioned last time around. And I remember when we went to see Niagara, and there's this one scene where I think she almost falls through the fence and falls to her death almost. And I remember sitting in the audience and someone to our left just let out a piercing scream. It wasn't Marilyn, it was someone in the audience, and it was perfect. Yeah. It was really perfect.
Sounds great.
Yeah, no, it was. We've mentioned earlier on 2020 and everything that this year has done to everyone. And I think it's something that we can't avoid when it comes to cinema. I mean, what was it like for you and for the Rex when you realized that you would have to close for months and it wasn't clear how long that would be?
We had these cooperations with streaming platforms, with independent ones based in Switzerland. We knew that we needed to still be in contact with the audience on a weekly basis with our newsletter. That's why we really started to do Rex at Home, we called it, so that people could go on watching the Rex films that were now stopped at the cinema, but available online on the streaming platforms. So that's why we started like cooperating with Filmingo.ch or Cinephile, or also with the film distributor called Outside the Box, who is really innovative because they just released their films online. Of course, you had to pay for it. And the cooperation was for Rex was not financially was not interesting, but still that kind of contact to the audience was still given through these streaming possibilities, which I think is not a concurrence to the cinema as such, but was a kind in that lockdown situation also needed for the people, because for me, it's I can't imagine life without films. And in that sense, you kind of continued the cinema experience at home.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not a fan of the streaming because afterwards, when cinema was reopened again, I started immediately going back to cinema. But I think for the lockdown, it was just great that we had these possibilities. And also to say that we will come back as soon as possible, and that we try to have that curated program on an online basis, in a sense.
Hmm.
And what was it like when cinemas opened up again? I mean, in America, it seems that while cinemas have opened up again, many people are not, they don't feel it's safe. It's also in other countries, I think people are very wary. What's it been like in Bern? Do you feel that the community has come back pretty much immediately to the cinema? Or do you feel that there are still people who simply feel it's not safe yet?
Well, as I was mentioning before, we have about 500 cinema friends with this annual card they're paying for. And we were very, very lucky that most people came back to cinema when we reopened. They were really happy to see us again. not only the team, but also the films, and to have another space to come. Also, the weather was quite bad in the beginning of June. And we started off with a little homage to Michel Piccoli, who just died. Mm-hmm. And of course, these films are just great to watch again in the cinema. And it was also packed, and I think there might be an audience that didn't return to the cinema because they think it's not safe. But for the numbers, we're very lucky that it's about the same as the last year so far.
Mm-hmm.
I think for Rex, it went well. I don't think that that's the case for the other cinemas, because if you look at the numbers in general, it's not good.
Yeah,
obviously, yeah.
What about you, Julie? How has it been in Holland?
Well, up to a point, the rules here were very lenient. So, well, a lot of people could sort of still go. But I think the problem becomes then that when government suddenly changes the rules, anything about the rules, people get insecure and they sort of stay at home and watch Netflix. And I think the larger multiplexes, I read that Cineworld in the UK and in Ireland has temporarily at least closed all its locations. And I think it's a big risk if you have a big multiplex that shows only blockbusters and has no, let's say, plan B, is that people just go and watch their series on Netflix. They really don't. I don't think the cinema adds enough value in that iteration for people to go there, as I said to Matt, and wear the mask for the whole showing, for instance. I wanted to go watch Tenet, but then I thought, well, yeah, but then I'm going to be wearing the mask throughout the entire production. It just doesn't give me what I want from cinema. So I don't know the numbers, obviously, but if I look at the news, at the film news and the social media, it looks like it's the multiplexes who are suffering the most at the moment. They also have the most money to back them up. But yeah, that's what it looks like to me, at least.
And I mean, in that respect, we've heard about so many films, big films, that have been basically delayed again and again and again. Disney's Mulan just went straight to Disney Plus streaming service. Tenet was released, but it was released late. I think Dune is still on the program, but the latest Bond film, of course, has been postponed to next year. And I think in that respect, the blockbuster cinemas, it's even if, you know, if numbers go down, if the rules become more lenient, I think there's going to be a lack of big films to come out because of all of this. And of course, now basically Hollywood won't be able to produce films at the same rate. I know that some films have continued filming, but there have also been outbreaks. I think the latest Batman film, Robert Pattinson has been diagnosed with COVID-19. I think there's just going to be, it's going to be very difficult, I think, for those cinemas. And again, coming back to the niche thing, to the retrospectives, being able to go back to 100 years of cinema and being able to kind of serve an audience that doesn't need to see the latest, greatest, biggest, loudest film, but who's happy to go and see a series of Marilyn Monroe films or a series of Morricone films. Mm-hmm. In that respect, the niche, again, will probably be helpful, I would imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. But the thing is that, I mean, we also have the very small film productions that we show at Rex, which was always the case during summertime, and which is still the same now. But what is going to happen maybe next year after, because lots of these productions now stopped, we still can't really imagine also for Rex. But probably we're a bit in a more luckier situation showing these smaller films with less people, with less money, which can still be produced. And also what I want to add is that in terms of streaming, we also showed Roma, a Netflix production. Yeah. And now we have The Trial of the Chicago 7 by Aaron Sorkin, which is also a Netflix production. And I think for the future, because now the distribution-wise are so diverse, it's on streaming platforms, it's at cinema. At the same time, the cinema lost its exclusivity, but that's probably a problem for larger cinemas, but not for the smaller ones. Because for Roma, for example, we had people coming to see it once or twice, or people saw it at home, but then came to cinema to watch it again because the pictures are so amazing to watch on that big screen. And also sound-wise, it was just great to watch it in the cinema, and it was also produced for cinema. So I don't think it's just a concurrence. Probably we just have to admit that some people prefer to stay at home on their own sofa, but there are still others who love to go to cinema, and we have to concentrate on the others that still come to us and not see all the other distribution channels as a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, that definitely makes sense. Okay, I think we've talked quite a lot about the cinema as a community, cinema as a ritual and all of that. We started off with some memories of cinema going as kids, or perhaps of not going to the cinema as kids. I think to end with, let's perhaps just share a couple of memories, fond memories that we have, where cinema was really the key element, where cinema made a big difference to the film that we were watching. I don't know, Julie, do you perhaps want to start?
Yeah, I mentioned Tuschinski before, the theater, my favorite theater in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. And there was years ago, this is quite a long time ago, there was Edward Scissorhands with a presentation by Tim Burton himself. Oh. So, of course, we all went. It was, I think, at 11 in the morning or something. And we listened to the lecture, and then we got to watch Edward Scissorhands. And then I got to meet Tim Burton, or meet. I got to say hi and have my DVD signed by him. He was ever so nice. Quite shy, actually. And then afterwards, because we had the day pass anyway, we got to watch whatever took our fancy. So I watched a little film that's called Wrist Cutters, A Love Story, which sounds quite morbid, but is actually rather a wonderful little comedy. I think I watched Crazy at the same festival, but maybe I'm wrong. So lots of independent stuff that was really interesting to see on the big screen and not wait until it was out on DVD and watch it at home. So that was a fantastic memory. I had a really, really great time in the middle of Amsterdam in this beautiful theater, having a lecture by Tim Burton about his film. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds very cool. I mean, I have a couple of small memories, but they were all very key, I think, in making me into a movie and cinema lover. I remember when I was 12 going to see The Name of the Rose with my sister and half-sister. And of course, when we got to the cinema, the person who was selling the tickets looked down at me. I was relatively tiny at the time. And he looked at me and said, but you're not 16, are you? And I said, no. And he said, this film is basically 16 and older. And I said, oh, but he still let us go. So for me as a 12-year-old, watching The Name of the Rose on a big screen was very educational about the Middle Ages and lots of other things. I remember a couple of years ago, during a very, very hot summer, they were showing The Turin Horse at the, you mentioned the Lichtspiel before, yep. Martina. And the Lichtspiel is basically, it's an attic cinema. It's basically just under the roof. So during one of the hottest summers in one of the hottest buildings, there were three people in the audience, my wife, me, and another person. And Bellatar, it was my first one. And it's not exactly the kind of film that you think you would normally watch during these kind of circumstances. So we grabbed a little ice cream and we sat there in the heat, sweating like crazy, watching the Turin Horse. And it was kind of perfect. In 2000, I was in Glasgow because of my studies for a couple of months. And they had the Glasgow Film Theatre there, which was also very much, they showed indie films, world cinema, and they showed retrospectives. And basically, ever since that, I was hoping that Bern would have a similar cinema. And then 5 years ago, the Rex opened and fulfilled my wish. And since then, it's just been very great for me to see all those films that I'd only seen on TV. Films like Stalker, The Godfather Part 2, Apocalypse Now, but also Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, finally having the chance to see them on a big screen. Mm-hmm. that's just been wonderful. So to end with our guest, perhaps, what are some of your special cinema memories, Martina?
Well, I come back to Hong Sang-soo. As I told before, I saw Hotel by the River in Locarno, I think it was 2019. And I also went to the talk afterwards with the director and with the actress, Kim Min-hee. And later on, strolling around with a friend of mine through Locarno, we saw both of them. And my friend actually thought that Kim Min-hee, which is just a beautiful woman, was blinking to him. So we were always talking about the actress. And yeah, I remember it as a very good moment, just this film where they talk about love, they talk about desires, and it's a lot of repetition, and it was just nice. And afterwards also, when I was watching a few films of our retrospective at Drex, I always think back to this blinking actress Kim Min-hee and my friend. And another very, very nice experience was when Christian Petzold, the German director, came to Bern because of our retrospective we did. And he was talking in 1 hour at Drex. And he's just such a good talker, what he thinks about cinema, how he works with his actors and with the stories. I could listen to him for hours and hours and hours. I think that was just a great experience to have him here. And also to have Bea Küter. She used to have a film distribution company called Look Now. And she was here too. And they had shared memories of old times, which was just great to be part of it and to listen to them. And I could go back to lots of other filmmakers or distributors or other people who work with film. And what I love is like to share or to get to know the story or the context around their films that we would actually play in the cinema. So I love these kind of meetings in a sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think this brings us to an end of a very nice conversation. Thank you very much, Martina. Thank you, Julie. Been great talking about cinema and sharing our love for it. Just to end off with, perhaps, what are you looking forward to in terms of culture or film or anything along these lines over the next couple of weeks? Martina, perhaps starting with you.
Well, I'm really looking forward to go to festivals again in person, not online, and to meet all these people. And another thing is to have a full cinema theater, because now of COVID we have to reduce the places. It's just another atmosphere if we have a cinema theater with 100 seats, which is really full with 100 people. And now it's full with about around 60 people. So I'm looking forward to really full cinemas and to festivals to go to. Yeah,
absolutely. Fingers crossed for you and for everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
That's going to be the case before long.
Yeah.
What about you, Julie? What are you looking forward to?
Well, they just changed the rules again. So I think I will just gather around the beautiful Blu-rays that I still have that are still in cellophane that I really need to see, and just gather them around and sit on my couch, close the curtains, turn off the phones, and enjoy some classic movies in October.
Right. That sounds good, yeah. Too. I'm looking forward to the Rex will be showing All That Jazz, and I think that should be absolutely fantastic to see on the big screen. I'm very much looking forward to that. But I'm also looking forward to something on the small screen. Steve McQueen, the writer-director of Hunger and Shame and 12 Years a Slave, yeah. He's just done an anthology series that's going to be shown on the BBC in November and December about the kind of black experience in Britain. So I think that should be very interesting.
Wow. Yeah, sounds great.
I read about that. Yeah, that's very interesting stuff.
So yeah, as I said, it's been a great conversation. So thank you very much, Martina, for joining us.
Thank you too.
And thank you, as always, to Julie.
Thank you.
And thanks, obviously, to all of our listeners. And we will be back again in a month's time. And in the meantime, enjoy as many damn fine cups of culture as you can get. Thank you and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.